This is Carl the Jackal Frampton.
Hi, this is David Healy.
Hello, this is Stephen Ferris.
Hi, I'm Bethany Ferris.
My name is Shola Amiobi.
I'm Jonas Gutierrez.
Hi, this is Harry Kuehl.
You're listening to The Score. Score.
The Score with Michael Clark. I'm a man.
Welcome along to The Score with me, Michael Clark. Here's what's coming up on this week's programme. The Nations League draw has been done, and what are your thoughts on it? We are going to be speaking to sports journalist Keith Bailey in just a moment to find out how likely it will be that Northern Ireland can perform better in this year's instalment of the competition. We are going to be previewing one of the big Friday night games with the help of goalkeeper Sean O'Neill. He recently played his 500th Irish League match, and tonight he is hoping that he can aid Ballymena United's efforts as they go down to Newry in a basement battle in the Premiership. And in the PIL, Warren Point Town, they've had it tough lately. Their vice-captain Jim O'Hanlon joins us on the show later on. They head to Limavady United tonight. That is a crucial match in their league. So we will be delving into that and so much more right here on The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Well, we are back for another week, and let's get right into it because we now know who Northern Ireland will face in the Nations League later this year, the matches which will be played in September, October and November. And joining us to dissect that, amongst some other matters, right here at the top of the programme on The Score is sports journalist and friend of the programme, Keith Bailey. Keith, how are you?
Not too bad, Michael.
It's great to have you back on. We now know who Northern Ireland are going to face. Matches against Luxembourg, Bulgaria and Belarus, all in the near future for Michael O'Neill's men. What are your thoughts on that draw? Are you quietly confident or apprehensive?
Well, I mean, anything could happen, couldn't it? I mean, Northern Ireland could win that group, or they could finish last in it and be relegated to the tier below. You know, it's a real kind of, you never really know what you get with Northern Ireland. But I suppose, listen, there's reason to be optimistic there. We obviously know that there's some bright young talent coming through at Northern Ireland with the likes of Callum Marshall and Conor Bradley, and they're getting more experience by the week. And you look at the group, and you know, that's, I mean, how much do you want to put on FIFA World Rankings? Maybe not too much, but Northern Ireland are the highest ranked of the four teams, or 72nd in the world, whereas Luxembourg are 83rd, Bulgaria 81, and Belarus are way down in 95. So yeah, there's a good chance there, I think, to win games, to get points on the board, to build a bit of momentum, and to at the same time hopefully continue to develop some of those talented young players that we're talking about. And the one that kind of stands out is Luxembourg, because we all associate Luxembourg as being this really poor team, minnows of the group, and you know, a team that has in the past, you know, lost games 9-0 and 10-0, but you know, they have come a long way in the last few years. You know, you always remember the games against the Republic of Ireland, so you can tell from those and they've came a fair way. You know, Gerson Rodriguez up front is, you know, someone who can cause anyone problems. He's playing for Dynamo Kiev, so he's at a decent level. But again, you know, what you'll hope there is that maybe that their wee run is coming to an end, and they're a little bit overrated or overranked, and we can take advantage of that. And you've got Bulgaria, who are, you know, I mean, I kind of think of Bulgaria in my childhood and them being one of the best teams in the world and getting to the semi-finals of the World Cup with Kostadinov and Stoichkov playing up front. Well, they're definitely not that team anymore. You know, they've had a real struggle in recent years, but like, let's not forget, it's not that long ago that, you know, we drew 0-0 at home with them as part of the qualifying for the last and most recent World Cup, and I think we lost, what was it, 2-1 out in Sofia after being 1-0 up. So, you know, in those two games there wasn't much between the two teams. We maybe like to think we've improved a little since then, and they don't seem to have done so. Again, opportunity there to pick up points, but again, like no guarantees. Bulgaria will be, there'll be somebody on a Bulgarian radio show saying exactly the same thing about North Ireland. So, you know, that's their games could go either way. And then you've got Belarus, who are the weakest team of the four, lowest ranked both in terms of UEFA's Nations League rankings and in terms of FIFA's World rankings, and it's obviously doubly difficult for them. The war in Ukraine means that they're not able to play their games in Belarus. They played last year, they played all their qualifying campaign games in Budapest behind closed doors. It's a bit of a shame it's behind closed doors, because Budapest would have been a great trip for Northern Ireland away fans, but it's not to be. I mean, it's not confirmed whether that'll be the situation going forward or not, but I mean, it doesn't seem like there's likely to be any change there. So again, you're playing a team who isn't really getting a proper home advantage. So that's a team that you really would expect Northern Ireland to take points from, and Northern Ireland should be finishing above them. So listen, I think it's one that we shouldn't be finishing bottom of the group as we did last time out. That would be a real disaster, an even bigger disaster than it was last time. But we have the potential there to win the group, hopefully. But you know, as we know, it's going to be very difficult.
It was really interesting for me when I posted the group on social media, looking through the comments, and you had a real variety from people saying, oh, we're going to finish bottom somehow, to other people thinking this is a great chance of getting through promotion, ready for the qualifiers, let's go. And maybe a good indicator as to what lies ahead come the latter part of the year when this tournament gets underway is how Northern Ireland fare in the friendly matches beforehand. Michael O'Neill's already said the whole point of the teams that Northern Ireland are facing, and the reason they've picked those teams, the ones that we know so far being Romania and Scotland, and there's speculation around Spain obviously in the summer, is they should be harder matches. So if we can come through those games looking half decent, it should give us a chance later on in the year. So weirdly, are we all going to be looking at these friendly games and going, right, show us something after the Denmark game, we need to see a bit of continuity, or is that overly optimistic?
It's hard to read too much into the friendly games. You know, I mean, if you look ahead to that Spain one, which I'm fairly sure is going to be confirmed in the coming weeks, you know, that's a top Spanish team who are going to be trying to prepare for the Euros and are going to be hitting a different level. There are players who are basically playing a couple of end of the season almost tour games off the back of a really long hard English season, so it's a different thing. The Nations League games themselves sort of become their own little thing, and I'm not really sure what happens in March and June will have a huge amount of impact on it. I mean, you look back to Michael O'Neill's first stint in Northern Ireland, and these were actually the games that we were very good at winning, maybe not so much in the Nations League, but in qualifiers, you know, we would have put away on a regular basis, home and away, the weaker teams in the qualifying groups. You know, that would be a great thing to build upon a game, because if you're ever going to compete for qualification, you need to win against those two or three teams that are below you. And you also need to win your home games, and that's something Northern Ireland haven't really been doing in recent times. Obviously a really difficult campaign at Windsor Park until that fantastic night against Denmark right at the tail end of the campaign. But with these three teams, you know, there's a great opportunity to get wins at Windsor Park, build the atmosphere, get a bit of positivity around the place, because let's face it, up until that Denmark game, things were pretty grim. The atmosphere at Windsor Park, way, you know, flitted between being pretty poor or being quite negative. This is an opportunity maybe to get the fans back on side and you know, get wins under the belt.
And when we look at the Nations League draw, I should just say that we know the dates now. So Luxembourg is how it all starts. That's in Belfast at Windsor Park, Thursday the 5th of September. The matches are in little blocks of two throughout those 3 months. Bulgaria away on the Sunday the 8th. Then in October, Saturday the 12th, away to Belarus, home to Bulgaria on Tuesday the 15th, and then home to Belarus on Friday the 15th of November, before finishing up away to Luxembourg, which is on Monday the 18th. So that's the run of games. And looking at Luxembourg, they might still qualify for the Euros too. So whilst we're talking about watching Northern Ireland in the summer and seeing how they're getting on, we might still be watching Luxembourg, depending on how they get on in these playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an unbelievable achievement for Luxembourg to qualify for the European Championships. I think it's a big ask considering the playoff pathway they've got, but even the fact that they're in there and we're having this conversation shows how far they've come and how much they've improved. You know, the slightly odd results during that last campaign. You know, they got lost 9-0 to Portugal, but they also had some other really good results in there. So a real mixed bag for them. So, you know, it's not one that you can bet that will definitely win. But like I say, three home games at Windsor Park, I'd be looking for 9 points from those three home games. And if you can do that, then, you know, that's going to be something that's going to help you build momentum going into the next qualifying campaign for the World Cup in 2026.
Just left out some of the comments that we are getting in on the programme. Dave on Twitter saying, Luxembourg, a nation on the up, 6 points is a must against them to have any serious hope. Bulgaria and Belarus, just like we have been the past few years, terrible. Thank you for that, Dave. Richardson, what a draw. Should be looking to win the group, aim for a playoff and get to the tournament. The manager should be happy. And Darren saying, immediate thoughts are, I wonder what ridiculous costs we're going to have to be paying to attend these games. So a mixed bag of opinion there. You know, should supporters expect to see any change in price? I think it's probably a fair question, isn't it?
Well, this is it. I mean, they're not three sexy fixtures, are they? But, you know, it'll be curious to see what way the IFA deal with things. What they've done in the past is they've linked the Nations League campaign with the forthcoming qualifying campaign. So, you know, for blockbookers or campaign card holders, as they're known as nowadays, you'll end up playing almost like a fee that covers what it'll be 8 games, these three, and then probably 5 in the World Cup qualifiers. And in those World Cup qualifiers, you're guaranteed a, you know, a top team, hopefully, that you don't get in these games. But yeah, it is difficult. I mean, like, can you really charge £40 or £45 for a ticket to Belarus or Luxembourg at Windsor Park? You know, it's a big ask on fans, and you know, if you get it wrong, you know, you could be left with empty seats, or maybe worse still, you can build up a bad relationship with the fans who, you know will pay those tickets because they love watching North Ireland play, and realistically you could put them even higher in the pit. But if they're left feeling ripped off, then that builds, you know, bad will between the association and the fan base, and you know, there's probably already enough of that as there is. So I think it's a tricky one for the FA. They need to approach it carefully and put a pricing structure in place that's affordable.
Taking things away from the international front, Keith, and the Irish Cup, there was question marks over one of the fixtures that was going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks, which was Institute versus Linfield. Obviously, there's already uncertainty around the day that match is going to be played because of other big sporting events that are taking place in the area, so there's all the considerations around that. But Ards put in an appeal, which we now know has been dismissed, and which would have seen them, if they were successful, reinstated in the competition at Institute's expense. Can you tell us a little bit about that? We've had people wondering, what's the difference between previous appeals and why Ards haven't been successful here when there's actually been an admission that a rule was breached?
Yeah, it's a curious one. I think this is the first mistake that people make when they start talking about eligibility issues is saying, well, X and Y happened, you know, last time there was an appeal involving two other clubs. You know, most of the time, two cases are always different. This case is different from the Portugal Ireland one last year that made all the headlines, or the Knockbeta one early in the season that saw them kicked out of the County Antrim Shield. So to look at it on its own merits, what happened here is that Oisin Devlin, who I'm sure many of your listeners will be aware of, he's now a loan player and is on loan at Institute. He wasn't named on the Institute team sheet before the game. Then, for whatever reason, Institute, Oisin Devlin decided to add Oisin Devlin to the team sheet. This happened after the initial team sheet was submitted. So you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to change the team sheet. But what you've got to do is you've got to inform the referee, and you've got to inform your opposition, as according to Rule 7C of the Challenge Cup. Now, Institute did one part of that, where they inform the referee, but the second part where you're supposed to inform the opposition, in this case Ards, that wasn't done. So the FA, Ards appealed on this basis that Rule 7C had been breached, and the RHFA agreed with them. The Challenge Cup Committee agreed with them and said that yes, you're right, Rule 7C was breached. Now, when I say that, you'd expect the next part of it to be, well, that means Institute are expelled from the Irish Cup, but not in this case. What happened was the Challenge Cup committee came to the decision, the verdict, a unanimous verdict, I believe, that although the rule had been breached, it was a procedural issue, not an eligibility issue. So therefore, they have decided that Institute can play their quarterfinal, and Ards' case was dismissed. So it is a bit of an odd one, where on one hand you're telling the team, yeah, you're right, 7C was breached, but on the other hand you're saying, you know, your appeal's dismissed because it was procedural rather than eligibility.
I think we really need to look at that particular bit of the ruling, don't we? That 7C, because the amount of times we've heard, they didn't tell us they've changed it, and then you've got, no, it did. Who did you tell? And then these ridiculous stories. It is almost impossible to prove that you have told someone or to prove that you haven't been told. So maybe there needs to be a bit more onus on the officials to log somewhere that they have overseen this conversation, because otherwise, how can anyone verify anything? Obviously, you're going to argue whatever suits your own team.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's obviously a he said, she said element to that, but if you actually look at the rule 7C, the team who is changing the team sheet has to tell their opponent in the presence of an official, as in the referee or the linesman or the fourth official. Listen, it seems like that hasn't happened. I mean, the IFA haven't put out the full verdict, but going by what the clubs have been told, it seems that there's an acceptance that 7C has been breached. The case, that what's the outworkings of this is that what the Challenge Cup committee are saying is, yes, a mistake has been made, but it's a procedural issue and not an eligibility issue, and therefore that doesn't mean that Institute should be kicked out of the competition. I think it's pretty likely Ards will appeal that. They haven't confirmed that yet. We'll probably hear something at some point today, or if not over the weekend, or whether they plan to appeal this. So it's one of them ones that could drag on a wee bit, which isn't a lot of fun for anybody, particularly when at the other end of it you've got a fixture in an Institute of Field at the Brandywell, which is, you know, controversial for different reasons. So obviously you've got the Derry Dublin GA game just next door a couple of hours later. So yeah, it's all a bit sticky, but I don't think you've heard the last of this.
Wouldn't be the Irish Cup without a bit of this going on, it feels like. Ards are involved in a big derby game later on, of course, and that game, if Bangor were to win it, would see them go top of the league at Clandeboy Park. Some cracking matches taking place tonight. We're going to hear from Sean O'Neill in just a few minutes' time. Ballymena United heading down to Newry City, a basement battle in the Premiership, and still to come in the programme as well. We're going to be talking about Limavady United and their match against Warren Point Town. We've got the vice captain of Warren Point Town, Jim O'Hanlon, joining us. So this is a really exciting Friday. But Keith, on the North Down Derby side of things, and Ards coming off the back of this, is that going to, I don't know, when you have that little complex, does it give you something else going into your next game? Us against the world?
I'm not sure. I don't think it'll really affect the changing room. I mean, how much players really care about these things, or it's on the radar, I'm not sure. But it doesn't need any extra motivation or stimulation, this game. You know, it's a big game in its own right, regardless of where the teams are in the league. You know, we've had two really big crowds at these fixtures so far this season. I mean, you had, you know, 1,200 plus on both Boxing Day and on the first game of the season back in August. You know, these two teams didn't clash for many years because Ards were always a division or more ahead of Bangor from 2016 until this season, and now the tables have really turned, and Bangor are the club on the up, and Ards are the club that are struggling or in a relegation battle. So it's a really big night for Bangor. You know, they win and they'll go to the top of the league. It'll be a slightly false position in the sense that it's only because, you know, the other teams are playing on Saturday, but you know, it does show how far Bangor progressed. It's not that long ago they were in the Ballymena League and they were playing in all sorts of weird cup competitions, and it was a real struggle for them, and they weren't getting great crowds at the game. You know, they're picking up big crowds, 500 plus at pretty much all home games tonight again. I mean, I'd expect there to be 12 or 1300 there. You know, it's going to be a big night. So yeah, it's a big occasion.
Well, that is a real sign of just how far they've come, and I'm sure Bangor will say if they can get top at this point in the campaign, they would nearly be in dreamland in terms of, could you imagine 26 games in them being top of the championship, whether it be for a night or anything else. Not too many people would have seen them challenging right at the top this far into the campaign.
No, and it's a crazy season, the championship. I mean, you look back on it last year, and the top teams that, you know, the teams that were so competitive last year, you know, Anna United would have been one, like, aren't really there this year. It's mad, because it's not just Bangor who've had a great season and surprised everybody. There's Institute as well. This time last year, Institute were in a relegation battle, and now I would probably place them as favourites to win the division at the moment. They're a really good team. You know, Michael Candy up front is just a smashing footballer, and they've quality from front to back. Then Portadown are obviously, you know, they have an ability to turn it on in cup competitions. Now the big question is, can they do that on a consistent basis in the league? And because it's such an open league, even though they've lost a few games and had a few difficult days, they're not far off it as well. And then you've got, you know, Dundella, of course, had a flying start of the season and maybe dropped off a little bit, but they're not out of the race. And listen, don't rule out Ballyclare comrades and the Welders, who are both putting together good runs at the right time. So there's six teams there that could all feasibly, you know, be near the top of the division.
Oh, it is such an exciting league. The Championship, Institute top on 48. 5 points behind them are Ballyclare comrades in sixth place, and they've the same amount of points as the Welders, who are above them on goal difference in fifth. So that gives you a picture in terms of just how exciting things are at the moment, and that is a big, big game later on. Ards with a chance to, obviously, for their own sake, try and make sure that they're adding a bit of distance between them and Dergview, and trying to build on what's been a very difficult year. John Bailey hoping that he can help resurrect fortunes there, and an Earl Derby win certainly wouldn't hurt in terms of confidence. But Bangor, the informed team going into that, we shall see. Keith Bailey, great having you on the Score as always. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Michael.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Now we are able to get our first footballer. We've been listening to a journalist. Let's talk to a real footballer now on the programme. And he's recently achieved 500 appearances in senior domestic football in Northern Ireland. That is an incredible milestone. It's a big congratulations to him as we welcome him onto the programme. Ballymena United goalkeeper Sean O'Neill. Sean, well done. How are you?
Yes, all good, Michael. Yeah, it was a nice moment to get to your 500 mark. To be honest with you, I knew it was coming because Marshall Gillespie had kind of tweeted me probably about 6 weeks ago saying it was nearly there. So every game I was playing, I was thinking, I wonder if I'm 500 yet. So yeah, it's a nice landmark to get to.
And it speaks to your longevity in the league. What is that like to get to that sort of number? You know, when someone makes you aware of it, because I know you're not sitting at home every night throughout your career going, that was game 72, game 73. But once you get to a big number like that, it must make you kind of take stock of things.
Yeah, well, the first thing that the wife says to me is that you owe me 500 Saturdays or 500 weekends. I've let you get out for them. No, it's great. That's I did actually sit back after the 500 game and think, geez, you know, it's, I'll be honest with you, it's starting to feel like 500. You know, the older you get and the more wee niggles you're getting after training and games. But, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. Everyone knows I love our league. You know, if there's Man United Liverpool on and, you know, Newry and Dungannon, I'm watching Newry Dungannon. It's just a brilliant league. It's fascinating. And this year is no different. So, no, it's great. Delighted to be part of the league for so long. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
With there being more synthetic surfaces, and I know you've played on those pitches, obviously you did for a long time at Crusaders, are they more unforgiving than a grass pitch? Or is there any difference for you? Because I know everyone goes on about their knees, but I'm thinking about your hip, so your back, your elbow, all the rest of it.
To be honest with me, I would take a 4G pitch any day of the week. Over grass. You know, you get the I think with 4G it's honest, you know what's coming. It's going to be slick, it's going to be nice and quick, the ball's going to come into you nice and quick, and you kind of deal with the grass. You know there's parts of the grass, there's divots, you just never know with the grass, and especially with the rain as well. You know, once a soggy pitch, it's really difficult to, you know, like for example, when we play tonight against Newry, you know, it's going to be a difficult pitch, and we know that. Whereas in 4G, you know, you can, you know, anywhere you can get the ball down and try and play. Whereas with Newry, you know, it's probably going to go back to front a wee bit much.
Well, let's talk about that game. It's a massive match. The bottom two teams in the league, a difficult predicament that both Ballymena United and Newry find themselves in. 6 points between you, and they have a game in hand. So I don't need to spell that out. You can read between the lines there the significance of this one.
Yeah, no, this is the biggest game that Ballymena United have played in a long time. And that's, you know, all the Irish Cup finals and that the last couple of years are great getting to them, but I mean, the bread and butter is staying in the Irish Premier League, and it's the biggest game that we've seen at the Showgrounds, well, at Ballymena for a long time. So yeah, it's massive. We know Newry what they, you know, they're capable of beating us. They've beat us this year already. But you know, on our day, we know what we're capable of as well, and we know we're a match for anyone. We've shown it against kind of the bigger teams this year rather than the teams around us. So hopefully, you know, we can go into that game with a bit of confidence after, you know, not a bad performance against Linfield last week. We're two big decisions go against us, and I thought last week we did okay, and hopefully we can bring that into this week and push on.
What do you think is the key thing? I mean, obviously points, but between now and the end of the season for your squad, look, there's a lot of young players in there, and I'm sure they're going to be leaning on you and some others to try and get them through. It's a difficult thing, I think, particularly for the young players, this sort of challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this year there's a turnover of players at Ballymena has been enormous. I mean, I think it's 18, you know, new players in the door. So that's difficult in a sense on its own. But I think players are starting to get up to, you know, speed with the game now. I think when new boys come in, especially young lads, Michael, you have to be aware that in the game we've all seen it. When you put young lads in, you know, you get inconsistencies. It's okay, you know, they let it to be playing their first game, and the adrenaline usually gets you through the first couple. But doing it on a consistent basis is that's where the better players in the league, you know, stand. They can do it on a daily basis. So I think now boys at Ballymena are starting to realise that they've got to be doing that week in, week out. With us, the main priority, I think, is goals have kind of probably killed us this year. You know, our defensively, we're actually not too bad. I think we're sitting sixth or seventh in the league. But goals, we haven't scored enough. We're rock bottom with goals, and I know people put this cliche out about, you know, goals win games and defence win championships, but you know, if you need goals to stay in leagues as well, and if we can get we really need a couple of goals. Thankfully, we've brought in a couple of strikers. Young Calvin McCurry's come in from Ballyclare, and we've got Michael Letty in from Shamrock Rovers as well. So hopefully they can put a couple of goals in, on the board for us, and we can start to push on a bit.
Am I waiting for a 0-0 here? I mean, Ballymena 17 goals in the league, Newry City 18 goals.
look, hopefully not. You know, to be honest with you, the last couple of games we've played against them, they have been, I think one was 0-0, was nip and tuck, and then Newry actually gave us a pace in it at Ballymena. So, you know, we know what we have to do. We need to go down there with all guns blazing, try and get 3 points. We fail at three. If we can win down there, you know, you go 9 clear. I know there's a game in hand there, but you know, 9 points, especially for teams who aren't winning a lot of games, you know, it's massive. So as you said at the start, this is an enormous game, and to go and win tonight will be massive.
I was at that game between the pair of yous earlier this season when they won 2-0. I know since then they've changed their manager. They also haven't won in the league since that game, a 15-match run that they're wanting to end. Focusing on Ballymena United, how have yous been keeping the spirits up? Because that must be challenging. At different games, there's going to be low points through any campaign, but in a season where you're fighting for your lives, how do you keep going? How do you keep finding the motivation to believe the next game's going to be a better one?
That's where your senior players come in. I think that's the likes of myself, kind of Stephen McCulloch, Even Kim Nelson has stood up this year. Scott Whitehead, obviously, as well. And you've still got the likes of Coetzee, who's obviously out injured, but he's still, you know, given his part from the sideline as well and in the change room. So, yeah, you're looking at your senior players to kind of keep the change room intact and keeping boys kind of motivated and making sure that, you know, there's good standards still kept in training and stuff like that. So yeah, that's the biggest point for the senior players this year. That's one thing that they have done. You know, the change room, sometimes when you get a change room, it's not winning. You know, there becomes cliques and people that, I mean, I can assure you that's not at Ballymena. It's a great group actually. And as I said, it's just a lot of young lads kind of learning the trade of the game at the minute. And, you know, the quicker they can do that and put, you know, good performances in weekly, then it's better for us.
What exactly happened between Boxing Day and New Year's where you had this lovely little purple patch? I'm sure you're going to want to try and dig into that again. Were there magic Brussels sprouts being distributed in Ballymena?
If only, because it would be tasting them out every week. No, look, I think our problem this year for me is we've done really well against the bigger sides, and the bigger sides, when I say bigger sides, you look at the two derbies against Coleraine at home, we've had good results, and then, you know, we had Lauren in there, we're coming off the back of the Coleraine game, we had a wee bit of resurgence about us, and we felt great. Everyone was buzzing about the change room and the ground, so I think coming off the back of that result was give us a kind of foothold of where we could go. But, you know, Michael, I'm not going to stay there and make, you know, say, you know, we've been great. We haven't been good enough from that, and we know it. And, you know, those supporters come week in, week out, to be fair to them, and they come in their numbers. We've always got a good support, and we just haven't done enough for them this year, and we need to be better come these kind of last kind of 7 or 8 games. So yeah, look, it's just a mad, just can't tell you how much tonight is a massive game. Like, it really is. It's and it's one we're really looking forward to.
It's funny, I was watching a thing on Sky and Ian Wright was saying, like, who would be a manager? Honestly, I could never be a manager. I just couldn't get dragged into that. He's spent a year as an assistant manager, and I think that put his head away enough. It's such a difficult job, and I'm thinking of the job Jim Irvin is trying to do at the moment as his first role. What has he been like? I know he's obviously going to say it's a learning curve because he's starting out. He's such an experienced personality, though, and leader. I'm curious what style of manager he is shaping up to be and what he is like to work with.
To be honest, I think Jim needs a lot of credit for what he's actually done at Ballymena. You know, everyone knows that, you know, there a lot of players had to leave at the start of the season, and the turnover of player coming in, has been huge. So he's had to deal with that. He's had to deal with obviously budgets getting slashed. He's also having to deal, you know, with big injuries. You know, Colin Coates is getting injured, you know, massive injury for us, because Coates, as you know, is a leader back there, and we kind of missed that for a while. So Jim deserves a lot of credit for the first and foremost where we still are as a club, because I think a lot of people would have sunk by now. I really do. And you know, he's firstly, as you say, more importantly, he's a good guy. That's one thing about Jim. You know, you can go to him with anything. On the other hand, as a manager, you know, it might be his first job, but, you know, with us, it doesn't feel like that. He's, as you say, he's been about the league for so long. He knows it in and out. He knows every team, you know, like the back of his hand. So, you know, he's. I think the more, you know, games that, and the more games that Jim Irvin gets as manager, people will start to see, you know, how good he really is. That being said, you know, I think if we can stay in the Premier League this year, because that's, if we're honest, we're at the minute we're fighting for the playoff spot. We are. We need to keep Newry at bay and keep, you know, get to that playoff spot to make sure, you know, who knows what can happen. We could go on a bit of a run and maybe drag Dungannon or so back into it. But at the minute, we're looking one win against Newry, to kind of keep them at bay and keep in that, you know, that playoff spot. If Ballymena can stay in the league this year, I think it is a massive achievement for what Jim's had to put up with all year. I really do. Because, as I say, turnover, budgets being sliced, the amount of money that was getting, you know, branded about the club last year, and now it's not. I think it will be a fantastic job if we do stay up.
And for the players that stayed on, I'm sure it's been in different ways challenging for you guys too, and that's not to be disparaging about any of the players that have come in. It's just a lot has gone on. How do you process it?
It's football. That's football. You and I have been in the game now for quite a long time. We know you just get on with it. It's not, you know, I know I'm saying that a lot of stuff is going on. It's not something players are sitting talking about in change rooms. You know, it's players are thinking, showing up to training, thinking, right, let's get a good session about us tonight and look forward to a game at the weekend. That's really all kind of players focus on. Whereas Jim's probably the one doing the worrying and the sleepless nights of what needs to be done and here and there. So, yeah, players just get on with it. They you know, it's one half a duck's back with them. Whereas I think the manager and the assistant manager and Steph Seaton have kind of put up with quite a lot. So, yeah, they've taken that kind of burden off the players and just kind of made us focus on good sessions and trying to get ready for Saturdays.
Before I let you go, you have played under some great managers, and shout any out if I miss them, but you know, the likes of Tommy Wright, Roy Walker, and David Jeffrey. But the one I want to mention is Stephen Baxter. You spent such a long time under him at Crusaders and won so much as one of his players, and we now know that at the end of the season, after 19 years, he's stepping down from the job. It surprised so many people. What were your immediate thoughts when you heard the news, and what are your thoughts now, having had a bit of time to process that?
Yeah, no, like everyone else, I was surprised. Although I did think maybe, you know, and over these last couple of years, I thought it was coming. I did think that Stephen was going to take a step back at some stage. But you know, look, he's had Stephen has been an absolute brilliant manager in the Irish League. He's done so much. You know, he's won everything there is to win in the league. He's done it. So yeah, he's had a fantastic career. Not only, you know, as a manager, he had a brilliant career as a player as well. So Stephen will go down as an Irish League legend, no doubt, in both, you know, playing and management. Yeah, what's next for him? I mean, I can't see Stephen leaving football, I will say that. I do think there's probably another job there for him somewhere. Where that'll be, I don't know. But I just feel, you know, he does love the game, and he's still, you know, what is he, 59, 58, 59. That's still a young man these days. So I just think there's quite a wee bit more in the Irish League football for Stephen Baxter.
And could you see him, you know, moving upstairs within Crusaders, or are you talking about another dugout? Because, look, I know what happens in football, but to me that nearly seems alien, and I'm not saying he wouldn't be capable of it. I'm just meaning he's so synonymous with the one club.
Yeah. I don't see what... I mean, I feel like there's another job at another club there for Stephen. I really do. Not going to name clubs or anything like that, but, you know, there's a couple of clubs in the Irish League that I think probably should be looking at him, thinking we could probably go and get Stephen at the end of the year here. You know, he's a serial winner, and a few clubs about at the minute need that. So yeah, no, I do. Like, you know, if he goes upstairs in Crusaders, he's obviously earned it. He's there's no doubt about that. He deserves every accolade going, and he could, you know, go up there, you know, drink his tea and eat his biscuits every Saturday. But I just don't see that happening for Stephen Baxter. I do think that there's probably another job in the Irish League there for him.
And I'm just thinking, you know, looking through the list of managers you've worked with as well, you must have needed that big personality that we all associate with you, Sean, to get through some of the hairdryer treatments that I think they're all pretty capable of dishing out down through your career.
Absolutely, you know, it started off quite difficult with Tommy Wright. You know, that's, I think Tommy was brilliant, absolutely fantastic he was, and he'd give you, you know, if you needed a kick up the backside, then you got it. And then Roy, you know, went on, kind of Roy Walker was a bit different. And then it went to Dixie Robinson and Darren Murphy. You know, Dixie was brilliant, more man management then. Going to Stephen was probably more man management rather than, you know, giving you these, you know, masterclass and team talk to try and get you, you know, foaming at the mouth, ready to take someone on. Whereas then you go to Davy Jeffrey, and that was Davy. You know, Davy was just everything. Davy had everything. You know, he was a great man manager, and he could also, you know, have you riled up, ready to take someone's head off in a game. So, yeah. And then now you get Jim, who's someone, as you say, is kind of new to management and learning his trade, but technically very, very good. So, yeah, been around the block, Michael. So yeah, all them. I'll take, you know, a fountain of knowledge from, you know, really will. I'll take a bit from every one of them, and hopefully one day when I kind of maybe step into that kind of role. But yeah, fantastic people to work with and to learn from.
Are you doing your badges? Where are you in your journey in terms of that?
I'm looking into taking them in the summer here. It's definitely something that I'd like to get into. So it's just, yeah, it's appealed to me for quite a few years. You know, I did think about it at the time when it was, you know, towards the end of Crusaders, would it kind of just go straight into them and do that way. But yeah, I'm glad I've stayed on, played a couple more years, and I'm going to do them in the summer and take it from there, see what comes of it.
You see, this is kiboshing my idea that, you know, in a few years' time, we're going to sit down, you're going to be on a tour called Gloves Off, and you're just going to let rip on everybody.
Well, I'm probably the one to do that. There's a vast amount of stories about a few in there, especially over 500 games, there's quite a few.
If anyone else takes that idea, I'm going to personally find them, by the way. I think it's quite a good one. We'll leave it there for today. But Sean, great catching up with you, and thanks so much. And genuinely, congratulations on the career you've had to date. Over 500 games is such a difficult achievement, and it's something that you can say you've done along with all the silverware you've got. So fair play to you.
Appreciate that, Michael. Thanks.
The Score with Michael Clark.
And now we can get our final guest of this week's programme onto the show. And what a massive match it is shaping up to be in the Premier Intermediate League. Is there anyone able to stop current table toppers Limavady United? Well, Warren Point Town will certainly be hoping so. There's still a long way to go in that league, and it is a tight old battle at the top. Isn't that very much the case? We've got the vice-captain of Warren Point Town on the show to talk to us, a familiar name for many Irish League fans, I'm sure. It's a warm welcome onto the programme for Jim O'Hanlon. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on being officially announced as vice-captain.
Yeah, thanks. Officially announced. Yeah, no, it's good. I'm happy with that. We obviously lost our captain there in January, so John Boyle's our new captain. There's no better man to be for. He's been in the league for a long time. He's very experienced, so no better man the captain is now. But yeah, I'm just happy to be vice captain and do my bit to help out.
You're an experienced figure. Many people will remember you from your time at Glentoran, and you know, I'm wondering now, with, you know, what are you, a sensible age of 30 these days, Jim? How do you look back in your time at the Glens?
Yeah, getting old now. spent many good years out at Glentoran. I loved my time there, to be fair. So I was always well looked after by the people there and the fans. So, no, I've always good things to say about the club, and took a lot of good experiences from there, and obviously disappeared to Australia for a while. But now I'm back. I'm still using that experience to sort of help me and help people at the club at Warren Point.
And it must be kind of weekends like this where we've got yellow weather warnings in place and everyone's sort of crossing fingers and toes and going, please no pitch inspections, please all the games on. We're going, why did I come back?
100%. I was just getting a photo sent to me there this morning, actually, in the job I used to work at. I think it was like 35 degrees.
Oh.
And I'm looking outside and don't know if it's going to snow or rain or what's going to happen. So it just takes a bit of getting used to, I suppose.
Oh, dearie me. Because when you were out there as well, you were playing. I was going to say a total jolly. I know you were working out there, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I was working. you have to work out there, to be honest. You can't get away with not working. So, but it was like it was unreal. You're working outside in the good weather, and the job I had, it was in sort of construction. So you were always in good weather, and it was great. It was a great time. But yeah, I played a bit of football too. So when I first went over, I was playing, and then I got a bit of an injury, so I was actually out for a bit, and then got back into football. It's different over there. You're playing in 30 degrees heat, and it's tough conditions. But no, it was brilliant. I loved my time over in Australia.
Did they have any weird lingo? Because I'll tell you what I've got in my head. When I was in New York on holidays, and I know completely different country and type of, you know, environment, but I was watching the MLS games, and some of the stuff their commentators were coming out with, I was going, what is he talking about? Are Australians a bit more like us, or do they have some weird jargon too?
They've got some weird jargon. It's not as bad. They're not like, we love soccer and all the games, but it is soccer over there, and football's Aussie rules, and then obviously just normal lingo, it's just completely different, so that takes a bit of getting used to as well, but they're not as bad as over there, I don't think.
You know, when I think the name Jim O'Hanlon, I don't know if you know this, my first ever radio commentary game for the BBC you were playing in, and it was a mental game of football down at Shamrock Park for Glentoran. You were 2-0 down in the first half and ended up winning the game 4-2, and they came to me because Mark Clark had scored a header around the 83-minute mark, and they said, right, we'll stick with you to the end of the game, let's see how it goes. 2-2 versus 9 men, and obviously, as you know, you won the penalty that put the Glens in front. Jay McGee scored it, and Carl McComb scored in time added on for a 4-2, and I genuinely think that bonkers game and me just nearly losing my voice in 10 minutes was kind of where it all started for me. But I always remember you played in that game, and seemed to always be involved in exciting matches any time I watched you. I'm just wondering, when you think back to those days of the Glens, because it was such a turbulent time, did it feel as crazy playing there as it maybe looked from the outside in?
Looking back, I realise now, at the time I was only obviously coming through a lot of those years, so I didn't probably realise at the time what I was involved in. Obviously a lot of the older players would have known, and like you say, it was a turbulent time. Like, the club was struggling financially at times, things like that. So on the pitch, Glentoran were used to obviously being at the top, and for those years they weren't really there. So we were involved in probably too many of those games. I remember a few loads of high draws and high scoring draws and Newington in the Irish Cup. So yeah, looking back, I realise now, yeah.
What does that do for you? Because, I mean, you know, that's an early sort of formative stage in your career as well. I'm sure you need a tough personality to be able to get through some of those matches. The Newington one, I mean, I watched footage of that recently when we were doing a little section on, you know, Irish Cup upsets, and it's one that, you know, still haunts people today. I'm sure the players involved as well.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was my daddy was talking to Scott Young shortly after it, and I think we were getting beat 1-0 at half time, and you know how the Glens fans can get, they're so passionate, so it was very hostile. I just remember walking off at half time, how bad it was, and then I think that was Scott Young's last game, so just shows you, like, it was tough times for everyone at that club.
And at the moment, Warren Point Town unfortunately are going through a tough time of their own. You look at obviously finding themselves where they do, and then manager Barry Gray leaving, and Fra McCaffrey, who I know is a good friend of yours, I think he's probably a good part of the reason why you went to the club. They've both gone to Newry City, so you find yourselves in a time of change.
Yeah, definitely. Flip January was sort of up there. I think it was New Year's Eve or New Year's Day we found out when Barry was leaving, so there was a lot of talk about people in and out and things like that. So obviously we lost Fra. He's my good mate, so he decided to move on for his own reasons, and that's fair enough. I haven't spoken to him since then, to be honest, but I'm sure I will soon.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is he blacklisted? Because my understanding was, because I've had Fran on this programme, he was kind of the guy that said, here, Jim, you want to come to Warren Point Town? And then next thing it's, here, Fran, where are you away?
Nearly. I know, it's my heart worked out. He was on the meet of going down to Warren Point, and he was a big part of me going down there, but I've loved my time there so far, to be fair, and of family connections and stuff down there, so it was an easy decision, to be fair, that way.
And talk to me about this push for promotion, because you could look at the league table and you know, anyone that isn't following the league might think, well, you know, are they out of it? Are they too far behind it? What is the mood like coming through all the adversity? Because you guys, I know, are very keen to make sure that you close the gap.
Yeah, no, definitely. Just before Christmas, I think, when you looked at the table, it was probably looking in our favour, because we had a few games in hand and we weren't far off. And then obviously January happened, we sort of went through that transition, and we've actually played well. We've been playing well in games, dominating, and we just haven't really got the results that we probably deserved. So I think it will turn for us. I don't think we're too far away. I think Limavady, obviously we play them tonight, so I think they're a strong side. They've strengthened well there in January too, so I think they're sort of in a good position to push on. But there's a few teams in and around us who can all sort of push for that playoff spot, and we all firmly believe that we can.
When you look at it, you know, you have Rough Ryland, who have a game in hand. They're level on points with you at the moment. Just above you, there's Ballymacash. Obviously, if you win, you'll at least for the time being jump ahead of them and level with Armagh City, who have played a game more than you. You know, before a ball is kicked this weekend, they're on 26, Queens on 29, Limavady United on 32. As I was saying before, it is so congested in there, and we've seen, you know, I guess on the negative side, how a bad month can really hamper you, but on the flip side, have a good month and you're right back amongst it.
Yeah, exactly. And a good month, see, if we get a good month, you'll be sort of, you're pushing up the table quickly. So that's all we can do, and just worry about ourselves, take each game as it comes, as we have been. And as I say, our performances have actually been very good. The mood and training has been good, so if we can just start turning our domination in games into wins, I think we'll be thereabouts.
Talk to me about the squad that you have then, Jim. You know, what have you all been doing? Have you had to do anything differently in training as things have changed? Obviously a new face has come in as manager, so that naturally leads to things maybe being tweaked here or there.
Yeah, no, there's been a few wee changes here and there. Nothing crazy. John Gill's our new manager. He was always there anyway. He was working along with Barry. So he knows the players, he knows the squad. There's a lot of young lads there as well, so it's good that there's not too much change in terms of that. And then we've got Gary Boylan, obviously, from Newry, and Gary's brilliant as well. He's great with all the lads. So it's just about, obviously, getting it right between the young lads and the older ones. There's not many old ones that are left now, so just need to sort of stick with the young ones, and they're all doing brilliant, so it's just a matter of keeping it going.
And within, I guess, your capacity as vice captain, you've already taken on a leadership role in there, but how do you find that side of your game and trying to help bring those players along with you? Is that something that you would do in terms of being vocal, or are you more lead by example type of guy?
Yeah, I wouldn't probably be the loudest, to be fair, but no, I like to speak to all the lads and give them my bit of advice when I can, trying to lead by example, of course. I always did before I was vice captain anyway, because they are such a young squad. I just remember from my time at the Glens when I was young coming through, there was loads of senior players around me, and they were all brilliant, and I learned so much from them. So I just try my best to do that for our young lads.
And when you see the likes of Marcus Kane getting his 400th appearance for Glentoran, I mean, that's a terrific milestone, isn't it?
Brilliant, he deserves it. He's brilliant, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's a legend for the Glens now. I'm buzzing to see him do so well and get that milestone, yeah.
What's your thoughts on the standard of opposition in the Premier Intermediate League? Because we know it's the third tier of football, but I think we've seen a real increase in quality.
Yeah, I think it probably surprised a few of us. I always remember at the start of the season, obviously even going through the Irish Cup early rounds, that was the first time we sort of played in those early rounds, and getting and starting going into the first few league games, it takes a bit of getting used to. Obviously in the Premiership, you probably actually find you get more time. Even going back to play Linfield there in the Irish Cup, you find you get more time compared to the Premier Intermediate. They're probably a bit more in your face, and sometimes they just make it difficult to play against. And as I said, anybody can sort of beat anybody in that league, which surprised me as well. I just thought it was going to be a matter of top teams beating the lower teams, which is probably stupid, but that's just the way it hasn't been.
And the early stages of the Irish Cup, I mean, that'll put hairs on your chest for years. There's boys had no idea what that felt like.
Yeah, no, that was a mad one. And we got a couple of local draws as well against Stephen McElorm's Belfast Celtic, and then another local team in the Meeson Oliver Plum. So it was different going and playing against them teams, but it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Were you taking pelters off Mackers?
Yeah, Mackers. Yeah, he's been on to me flat out about it. But he's got a good team there. He's got the boys doing well. So it was different just being on the other side of the dugout from Mackers.
Yeah, I know. Could you ever see yourself managing or coaching one day? Is that something anywhere in your mind, or is it firmly focused on still playing? Because you've plenty of years left in you, I would have thought.
Well, hopefully, anyway. Yeah, no, it is something I'd probably do down the line. I haven't really got into it in terms of getting badges or anything like that, but no, I'd definitely like to stay in the game somewhere or another.
And for Warren Point fans listening to this, you look at the next couple of league games. You've got a Distillery after that, Banbridge, Rough Rylands, quite a few away fixtures coming up, way to Dollingstown as well. What is the message? You know, is it a case of just a rallying cry at this point, or is it not even a case of anybody thinking in those terms?
The fans are all sort of, the fans are great down at Warren Point. There's so many great people down there, and they're all sort of, they know what the club's been going through this last month. Everyone's been on board together. That's how it feels. It feels like it's a whole club and community thing rather than just the playing side, things like that. So I think they're on board with us, and as long as we put the effort out on the pitch, they're happy.
So you're not feeling too under pressure. It's nearly bonded you even more.
Yeah, we do feel the pressure, probably more personally, especially I don't think the club deserved to be where they are. Obviously, they were hard done by last year. We were preparing to go into a playoff game to get into the Premiership, and then it flipped and now we're in the Premier Intermediate. So obviously we all try to stay and do a bit to try and get the club back up. But no, I think the fans are sort of, obviously they want the club back where it should be, but yeah, the pressures are anyway.
Was it hard to initially pick yourself up after that ruling? I'm not trying to open old wounds. What's done is done at this point, but it probably took a little while for everybody to come to terms with what had happened.
Yeah, it was for a few weeks, sure, because it was being appealed and stuff. We were still preparing to play at Dungannon, obviously, in the playoffs, but then obviously it didn't work out. So it was a matter of as soon as that was sort of decided, we knew what we'd been doing. It got sorted. We knew where we were staying and where we were playing next year, and we just all wanted to get back into it and do our bit to get the club back up.
And finally, from your perspective, looking at all the teams that are competing for those top spots in your league, Limavady United have obviously been very impressive. Are they the team that has stood out most to you? I guess with 10 wins from 14, it's hard to look past them.
Yeah, no, they've definitely got a strong team there, and as I said, the strength in January, but I think we're the only team to beat them this season so far, so it's hard not to look past them. But yeah, I think going into the game, we can just sort of be going confident because we know we have won over them this season already. Why not making another?
Well, there you go. And you do that, all of a sudden it's 6 points, and we're really talking about game on again. This is such a big Friday night. You've got the bottom two in the Premiership playing each other. You've got a North Down derby going on in the Championship, which could send Bangor top. And then you look at this game between two of the favourites in the third tier. We're on, for fingers and toes crossed, the weather allows it. A really, really exciting night. And Jim, you're part of it, so good luck to you. Thanks so much for coming onto the show.
No problem at all, Michael. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me again.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Great getting the thoughts of Jim O'Hanlon there. Before we let you go, let us quickly remind ourselves of the matches taking place in the Premiership this weekend. Two matches taking place later on tonight. One of those is the game we've been discussing earlier on in the show, Newry City Ballymena United. The other is Larne against Loughgall. And would you look at that, a chance for Larne to go top of the Premiership table at least for tonight. After Linfield's defeat against Dungannon Swifts, that allowed Larne to bring the distance between the sides just down to one single point. Linfield in action tomorrow. They are away to Glenavon. Cliftonville host Coleraine, and they are looking to continue their good season. Before a ball is kicked tonight, they sit 4 points behind Linfield, 3 points behind Larne, so crucial that they do not drop any points at this stage. But Coleraine, have they turned a little corner finally? Will they be able to ruffle feathers at Solitude? Dungannon Swifts take on Crusaders, and Crusaders, as we know, Stephen Baxter stepping down. Very interesting hearing what Sean O'Neill's thoughts on that are. And I think for the rest of the season, everyone's going to be walking around every single Crusaders game going, I wonder who's taking over. I wonder what's going on there. I'm not sure if we're going to have any light shed at this early stage in the game taking place this weekend. Duncannon Swift's Crusaders could be a tricky enough tie for the Crews. And the other Saturday match sees Glentoran play host to Carrick Rangers. And we know the trouble Carrick have caused Glentoran already in this campaign. So those are your top flight matches. Lots of action up and down across the country. Fingers crossed there will be no issues relating to the weather after a rather blustery 24 hours or so and some heavy rain. But we shall wait and see. For now, though, our time is up. So all that is left for me to say is enjoy your weekend of sport. Bye-bye.